मय्यन्नन्येन भावेन भक्तिं कुर्वन्ति ये
द्विधा
मत्कृते चक्रकर्मानस्
Unto me, 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 unto
Bhaktim.
Bhaktim.
Devotional service.
Devotional service.
Kurvanti.
Kurvanti.
Perform.
Perform.
Ye.
Ye.
Those who.
Those who.
Dvidha.
Dvidha.
Staunch.
Staunch.
Very interesting word. Prabhupada has some favorite words. English poetical words. Staunch, well, staunch means determined, steadfast. The original meaning of the word, anybody know? What the word originally means?
Actually,
it's a nautical term. It means waterproof, on a boat doesn't leak. It's called staunch. Water doesn't leak in it. That's the original meaning of staunch. So a strong boat is a staunch boat. Doesn't leak. Okay. Staunch devotional service. I'm sorry, continuing. Matkrite.
Matkrite.
For my sake.
For my sake.
Tyakta.
Tyakta.
Renounced.
Renounced.
Karmanaha.
Karmanaha.
Activities.
Activities.
Japta.
Japta.
Renounced.
Renounced.
Swajana.
Swajana.
Family relationships.
Family relationships.
Bandhava.
Bandhava.
Friendly acquaintances.
Friendly acquaintances.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Such a sadhu engages in staunch devotional service to the Lord without deviation. For the sake of the Lord, he renounces all other connections, such as family relationships and friendly acquaintances within the world. Purport. A person in the renounced order of life, a sannyasi, is also called a sadhu, because he renounces everything. His home, his comfort, his friends, his relatives, and his duties to friends and family. He renounces everything for the sake of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A sannyasi is generally in the renounced order of life. But his renunciation will be successful only when his energy is employed in the service of the Lord with great austerity. It is said here, therefore, Bhaktim Kurivam Tiye Vidav. A person who seriously engages in the service of the Lord and is in the renounced order of life is a sadhu. A sadhu is one who has given up all responsibility to society, family, and worldly humanitarianism, simply for the service of the Lord. As soon as he takes his birth in the world, a person has so many responsibilities and obligations to the public, to the demigods, to the great sages, and to the general living beings, to his parents, to the family forefathers, and to many others. When he gives up all such obligations for the sake of the service of the Supreme Lord, He is not punished for such renunciation of obligation, but if for sense gratification a person renounces all such obligations, he is punished by the law of nature. So Lord Kapila, as the spokesman for the person, for the Lord in all his incarnations, he's talking about himself here, those who have undeviated devotion for me, love for me. He doesn't just mean for me in this form of Kapila, but me in all of my appearances. He's speaking as, let's say, spokesman for the Vishnu Tattva in general. He makes it very clear here that renunciation is a very good qualification, but it is not complete in itself. It must be joined with pure devotion. A pure devotee who is renounced actually pleases the Lord. And someone who has renounced everything but hasn't renounced it for Krishna doesn't actually please Krishna, and therefore he doesn't achieve real spiritual success. Narada told his disciple, yes, Naishkaram Yamap Yatuta Bhava Varjitam Nashobate Ganama Lama Nirojanam. Same word here, Bhava. Same meaning, love. Achyuta Bhava. Love for the infallible personality of Godhead. Naishkarma. Renunciation of all works. Inactivity. Is not pleasing. Nashobate. In the eyes of the speaker, Narada, who is representative of Narayana, Narada is speaking the opinion of Narayana. He doesn't speak anything else but what Narayana himself would say. So Narayana is not pleased. The Supreme Lord is not pleased by impersonal renunciation. One may accomplish great things. Even just by avoiding sex, one has accomplished 50% of the work of gaining liberation. Our main bond is attraction to sex. If you can give that up, even externally, at least stop pursuing sex gratification. The desire may be still festering unconsciously in the back of the mind, but at least you're not acting upon it. Then you have actually accomplished 50% of the work of liberation. The other 50% is relatively easy. But it doesn't satisfy the Lord. Well, let me finish that verse first. Naishkarmyam apyatu bhava varjitam. You may give up all material activities. You may have no family anymore. You may have no social obligations. But if you're not trying to develop love for the personality of Godhead, then that's not a real spiritual accomplishment. This doesn't please the Lord. Nishobati. Gyanamavam nirandanam. Even though there's no material taint, there's also no spiritual taint. It's just negative, empty, basically doing nothing. It's not that Krishna wants us to become totally inactive. That's not the real idea of renunciation. The idea is Lavate Brahma Nirvana. Yes, Krishna promotes the idea of Brahma Nirvana. But Brahma Nirvana in Krishna's conception means you become very active for the service of the Lord. Manmana Bhava Madhbhakto Madhyaji Mamaraskuru. Be my devotee,
And being Krishna's devotee doesn't just mean to sit in the corner and think, I'm Krishna's devotee. You have to do something about it. He might actively engage in my service. Madhyaji, perform the worship of me. We may do puja, wave a stick of incense at Krishna, but there are also even more effective ways to serve Krishna in this world. So we can do puja, we can even offer some naivedyam, offer him some rice and dal. What does he need our rice and dal for? He's got hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune cooking for him in Vaikuntha, who cook better than we do. So what does he need our puny offerings? We wave a couple of sticks of incense at him, made out of pig feces, the incense that we buy. What does Krishna need that for? He accepts. We're trying, like little children, trying to make some loving exchange. So he accepts it. What does he need? But there are other more practical things we can do for Krishna's service in this world. More useful things. I can actually only think of two things that we can do in this world that cannot be done in the spiritual world better. There's no killing of demons because there are no demons to kill in Vaikuntha. And there's not much preaching because there's nobody in the illusion. No opportunity to kill demons, no opportunity to preach. If you want to kill demons or preach, that's better done in this world. There's not much scope for killing demons in the lila of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He refrains from it, and his devotees are expected also to refrain from shedding blood. So the only thing left is to preach. To be engaged in the preaching mission, serving the preaching mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is a way to actually worship Krishna. It's not passive, it's not impersonal, it's very active. Madhyaji. That's what Krishna means by worship. Do something. Get off of your asana and do something practical. Mandalas Guru, and always offer your obeisances to me. And that's not just make a show in front of everybody. In Bengal, there's a class called Dandavadis. You know, if you have a quarrel, in Bengal people get into quarrels a lot. They're passionate people. The way to break up a fight in Bengal is to pay Dandavadis in front of everybody. Then everybody else will get down on the floor. Now, that's the way to stop a fight. But that's just an external show. You also show humility and bow down and beg and hold straw in your teeth when you want to get something from somebody. But that's just material manipulation. The real idea of Dandavat is to offer yourself as a servant. Mamma Guru means you should always present yourself, acknowledge yourself as my servant in all conditions. When you're doing well, when you're doing bad, and in between, you should always remember that you're, and remind me that you're my servant. By bowing down and also by other displays of attitude and practical services. Mam Namaskuru, always be subordinate or surrendered, dependent upon me. This is what Krishna wants. This requires rising even above Shantaras. The yogis in Shantaras, they appreciate the greatness of God if they have any tinge of devotion. They may graduate to Shantaras, neutrality, appreciating the greatness of God. Allahu Akbar, God is great. Good, but Krishna expects something more. The actual program of Krishna consciousness, especially as taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his representatives led by Rupa Goswami, the actual Krishna consciousness program begins with Dasya Rasa, active service, entering an actual personal relationship of being a particular servant, accepting a responsibility for a particular service to please Krishna. And all the other higher relationships, the other rasas, friendship, parenthood, conjugal relationship,
are built on dasya. Dasya is the common certitude. Being a servant is the common denominator. The gopis have a much more intimate relationship with Krishna, but they still consider themselves servants. In the Gopi Gita, they sing that we are your nikshuta dasika. You're sold out, or nikshuta means, you know, we're maidservants, but you don't pay us. You know, a lady may come and do our laundry and clean our floor, we pay her 300 rupees a month. But that's paid service. When someone does that service for free, it's called nikshuta dasika, it's usually called wife. She does the same work without being paid. But the gopis are thinking like that in relationship to Krishna. Not that they're his wives, but they're completely sold out to him and they expect no payment, nothing in return. He can kick us in the face, we'll still be his servants. So that servant, it's just a special kind of servant. You take the word dasa, turn it into the feminine form with the suffix eep. E, das, becomes dasi. But they said something else. They said they added another suffix onto that, ika, which means diminutive, little servants, insignificant female servants, maid servants. So the generic idea of das has been modified into insignificant maid servants, dasika. And that's further modified, insignificant maid servants who don't get paid. Nikshuka dasika. It's still dasa, it's just a special kind of dasa. Female, diminutive, unpaid. But the common idea, the basis of it, with the extra ingredients added, is service. It's a very, very dedicated form of service. You don't have to be in love with someone to accept employment and get and work for money. You normally don't love your employer. But when you work for someone for free, there must be something deeper going on there. With no recognition, no honor. The gopis can only expect dishonor for them, for having broken all the social rules. To be consorting with Krishna, they're married to other men, they have children. And they're risking everything to be with Krishna. So they don't expect any honor from it, only dishonor and condemnation. That's a good service, special service. That's really renunciation. Who's the most renounced? Not the yogi sitting on top of the mountain, chanting Om, doing nothing else, but the gopis of Vraja. Married ladies, gwalas, not educated, cowherds, doing household work, and then running out at night after some boy, you know, and leaving behind their husbands and children. And they are the most surrendered servants, glorified by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wants to be one of those. Uddhava, great, respectable scholar and intimate advisor of Krishna in Dwarka. He wants to become a follower in the footsteps of the gopis. Let me take birth among the trees and creepers in Vraja so that the dust that has fallen off the feet of the gopis can somehow find its way onto my head. I don't expect to be allowed the direct association of these cowherd women, but let me come indirectly into contact with them, and let me live in this Rajadham so I can have that dust on my head. So we think that Uddhava was told by Krishna at Krishna's departure, that Krishna told him, you stay here and you go to Badrinath and preach and give my message to the sages up there. And then it's understood that after he did that service, which took a few months, Uddhava then went back to Dwarka, Vaikuntha, to join Krishna again. That's the official version. That's what Uddhava did in his public pastimes. But in his invisible pastimes, Uddhava is still living in Mathura Mandala. Behind Kusuma Sarovara, in the bushes, Uddhava is living there. In the sky, or even in the bushes. You cannot see him. They have Uddhava Kunda in the wrong place. You know, on the other side of the Paramount Park. That was established by some Punjabi businessman 8 years ago. Uddhava Kunda. The real Uddhava place is 50 yards behind in the bushes, where he's actually staying. He can be seen, but only by those souls who attract him by their sincere performance of Harinam Sankirtan. Anyway, that's a different story. He wants to become a follower of the gopis. He recognizes that they, although he is such an intimate servant of Krishna, that Krishna almost never leaves his company. Even when Krishna goes away from Dwarka, he very often takes Uddhava with him on his trips. Because he depends on Uddhava's advice so much. Uddhava is the only person, practically, who every day gets Krishna's Mahaprasada. Even his parents don't regularly get his Mahaprasada, the way Uddhava does. Because Uddhava is always there with him. He takes lunch with him every day. So such an intimate servant of Krishna, that he's ready to quit his job and become a bush in Vraja, in order to be able to follow in the footsteps of the gopis, that they're actually much greater servants than he is. They actually please Krishna much more than he does. That's his recognition. That's what he realizes. That's renunciation. Real renunciation is to do whatever pleases Krishna, and to give up everything else that doesn't please Krishna. Sarva dharmam parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. That was Krishna's last instruction to Arjuna. What the Sri Vaishnavas call the Charana Shloka, the ultimate statement of the Gita. Give up all your ideas of what you think your duty is, and just depend on me completely and do what I want you to do. Whatever it is. Leave your family, stay with your family. Arjuna wanted to renounce. At the beginning of the battle, he wanted to quit and go to the forest. That's typical renunciation. When Emperor Ashoka decided to renounce his military career and promote nonviolence, he was glorified for that. He promoted Buddhism. Although he actually didn't stop fighting, he kept on waging war after that still. Anyway, he's famous for promoting Buddhism and nonviolence. But Arjuna was ridiculed by Krishna for trying to do the same thing. Ashocha namba shocha swam. You're speaking like a learned pundit, but you're lamenting like a crybaby for things that a hero should never lament for. You know, are you afraid to shed blood? Are you hesitant to do your duty as a kshatriya? Where is this? Where's this weakness coming from you? Where's this idea come from you, this idea of non-violence? Not appropriate for a kshatriya like you, Arjuna. This is ultimate insult. Don't be a eunuch again, Arjuna. Arjuna was cursed previously. What was the curse? I don't remember which Apsara it was, wanted to have sex with Arjuna. But he considered her his mother. And he said, I can't have a relationship with you, you're like my mother. And she said, no, up in heaven we don't have those restrictions. You can have sex with anybody you want. And there's no blame. And he said, no mother, I'm sorry. I cannot, forget my relationship with you, you're my mother. And she cursed him. You'll become a eunuch for 1 year. And he did. And coincidentally, that was the last year of their exile. and they have it going to, this guy's incognito anyway. So he, as a eunuch, disguised himself as a dancing teacher and became the teacher of the princess and her maidservants in the court of King Bharat. He was a eunuch for 1 year. Great shame for Arjuna, big hero, he-man, a romantic hero, and he had to become a eunuch, wearing a skirt, teaching dancing. And Krishna's telling him now, a few years later, you're going to become a eunuch again? Yeah. Clive him, don't become a kleba, don't become another eunuch again. You already went through that once. So Krishna's ridiculing Arjuna for his ideal of nonviolence. This is not, Arjuna, what I want you to do. You may think it's the best thing, it's right, but it's wrong, because I don't want it. To me, it's ridiculous. So real renunciation is to do what Krishna wants us to do, which varies from one individual to another, and even varies for the same individual from time to time. At one time, Krishna wants us to do one thing, and then all of a sudden, he wants us to do something else. Yudhishthira, Arjuna before the battle, he didn't want to fight. And Krishna had to speak the whole Bhagavad Gita to convince him. But that was relatively easy. That only took 48 minutes, two gunpas, to speak the 18 chapters of the Gita. After the battle, his older brother, Yudhishthira, had his moment of crisis of hesitation. He didn't want to accept the throne after the battle. Enough problem with Arjuna and now Yudhishthira. After the battle, he didn't want to accept it. The battle is won. The kingdom is conquered. And he doesn't want to accept the throne. It's all my fault. All the widows hate me because I killed their husbands. You know, how can I enjoy these spoils tainted by blood? He refused to accept the throne. Everybody tried to convince him, you've got to do it. Come on, we won the battle. You're the king. You have to sit on the throne and accept. Krishna tried to convince him. Vyasadeva and other sages tried to convince him. They went on and on. Not 18 chapters, but over 300 chapters of the Shanti Parva of Mahabharata and the Anushasana Parva. And then finally Bhishmadeva was able to win the confidence of Yudhishthira when Krishna and Vyasadeva could not. And Yudhishthira listened to Bhishma's instructions for another 150 chapters. So for 366 chapters total, Yudhishthira has to be instructed by everybody, finally Bhishma. And then he gives up his hesitation. Okay, I'll accept the throne. So that was a lot more difficult than convincing Arjuna. He had his moment of hesitation. He had to be convinced. You do what Krishna wants you to do. That's real surrender. Forget your idea of what's right and wrong. And just please Krishna. We think that giving up all the objects of this world is real renunciation. It's not. First of all, because it's not your property. What's the use of renouncing something you don't own? I donate this car across the street, but I don't own it. So what's the use of that donation? I don't own anything. I have nothing to renounce. So the impersonalists want to renounce everything in this world, and it's considered, according to the sages who preached to King Nimi, as Pogavaiyadhi. Papamchikataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastunaha bumukshubi parityago vairagya polukatyate. Thinking that these things are just products of matter, wife, children, money, society, it's all maya. I will avoid all of it. I will never touch money. I will never, you know, be within 10 miles of a woman. I will avoid all social obligations completely, and that's considered renunciation by the impersonalists. But the false thing about it is that many of these things are meant to be used for Krishna's service. Not for everybody. Sannyasi is not supposed to have connection with women.
But some devotees are married. They have to have a connection with their wife and their children. If they neglect their obligation to the wife that they married and the children that they begot, then the wife and the children become neglected and become burdensome society. And they fall and they become corrupted. Because their husbands are running off to become so-called sadhus. So, renunciation, and you know, avoidance of the association of women is something to be done for a sannyasi. And a man who's married should not associate loosely with men who are not his wife, but his own wife, his own children, he has to take care of. That's his renunciation. So things that are meant to be used for Krishna's service, I want to reject because I say they're material. That's insignificant. That's actually inappropriate renunciation. It's meant to be used for Krishna's service. I'm saying don't touch it. Just like there's one sannyasi, famous sannyasi of no longer with us from Gujarat. I won't mention his name. Prabhupada commented that there's a picture, a photograph of him sitting in front of a table covered with money, and he's like this, showing that he won't touch it. Prabhupada said, you take the same photograph with me, I'll be like this, grabbing all the money. Because he'll use it for Krishna. That's higher concept of renunciation. And that's also explained, this, that other verse and this other one I'm going to say now, spoken by Rupa Goswami, written by him, is Bhakti Rasami Jacinda, nephew of devotion. He defines appropriate renunciation, the renunciation practiced by the devotees. Anasaptasya Vishayan Yatarha Mukha Yunjataha Nirbanda Krishna Sambande Yuktam Vairagi Mujate. This is what is called appropriate renunciation. Connecting everything to Krishna. You can become disconnected from material things by taking them and giving them back to Krishna. Using them, but as Krishna's servant, not for your sense gratification, but for Krishna's glorification and gratification. Without being attached, accept the sense objects in the service of Krishna. The ones that are appointed for you. You have this wife, these children, or you have this occupation, or you're a sannyasi and you have these disciples, these are your obligations. Accept them for the service of Krishna. Don't reject them, don't neglect them. Give everything back to Krishna, and then that's true renunciation, appropriate renunciation. The man should think, this lady is Krishna's maidservant. She's not a machine for my sense gratification. And my wife and child, I have to try to encourage them to serve Krishna. That's his responsibility. So when Prabhupada's talking about renunciation, he's talking about that also. The renunciation even of the grihasthas, who give up everything that's in the way of Krishna's service and accept whatever is what Krishna wants them to accept. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjana. Sankalpa and varjana. Sankalpa is deciding to accept something. So everything that is anukulya, that is favorable to becoming more Krishna conscious, or favorable to pleasing Krishna, I will accept. And everything that will get in the way of my serving Krishna and developing my Krishna consciousness, I will avoid. And reject. That's actually the two first steps of Sharanagati. Hare Krishna. Of taking full shelter. Becoming fully dependent on Krishna. And that's what basically Kapila Deva is talking about here. Sharanagati. Taking shelter of Krishna. The devotees, the real sadhus, who are actually renounced, they have undeviated love for me, and they, with firm determination, are always engaged in trying to serve and please me.
as a symptom of that, they're ready to give up everything that gets in the way of their complete dedication to Krishna. Whatever is in the way, be it family, friends, society, anything, well, they're ready to give it up. When it's necessary, when Krishna wants them to give it up. Anyway, the theme is devotion to Krishna. The secondary theme is renunciation. The devotion is the important thing. The renunciation is of value only when it serves the real purpose of devotion. Okay, so that's what he's saying here. We'll continue next time. Are there any questions or comments?
Please read the verse one more time.
Yes.
Because
okay.
We apologize for that.
That's okay. The verse is number 22 in chapter 25 of the third canto. Kapiladev says to his mother, such a sadhu engages in staunch devotional service to the Lord without deviation. For the sake of the Lord, he renounces all other connections, such as family relationships and friendly acquaintances within the world. Any questions?
You said you can serve Krishna by teaching. So one of the ways is teaching, and second is killing of children. So we cannot do that. We can teach. But the person who is near Krishna consciousness, who doesn't know how to teach, who is not clear about anything, and who knows few things,
yes.
What other service he can do?
Well, you can still preach. Everybody you meet, you can tell them the one or two things you know. If you know anything about Krishna, and you know it correctly, but you're sure you know, when you actually realize that, you can preach. Well, you don't have to know many things. But don't preach above your head. Don't start talking about things that you don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. And there are support services you can do. You can do, if you don't feel up to actually speaking about Krishna, although you should try it anyway, even just to somebody sometime. And when you can't do that, then you can do things that will support the preacher. You go to the temple and sweep the floor. That facilitates the preachers. First of all, the temple is a place for preaching. People are coming to see Krishna, and they're coming to talk, meet the devotees, and talk to them. If the place is filthy, people aren't going to want to come. If it's spotless, they'll be attracted. So you clean the floor, that will help the preaching. Or so many services. When they're done, and if they're done in the ISKCON framework, then almost all activities are preaching activities. They're either directly or in support center, working for the purpose of the preaching. If you do things on your own, then it's harder to make it turn it into preaching. But when you're working in the context of a society that exists just for preaching, then everything you do is preaching. I hope it's supposed to be. And you may not feel comfortable, ready to preach. Practice. Get yourself ready to preach. Listen very carefully, with great attention, and then you'll become prepared to speak. The shravanam is the preparation for hearing. Hearing. Hear nicely, then you'll be able to speak nicely. Okay, anything else? Yeah, yeah. So that was the Arjuna's question at the beginning of the 18th chapter of the Gita. And Krishna made the point that you can call nyasa karmanam sannyasiam sannyasa karmanam nyasa sannyasa. So giving up material work, that can be called sannyas, and renunciation can be defined as giving up the fruits of all work. It's like stopping work or giving up the fruits of work. The two different ways to approach it. You continue working, but don't keep the fruit for yourself. Do it all for Krishna. Or you can just stop working. But actually, devotees don't like to do that. They don't want to become inactive. They'll give up inferior work
in order to take a better engagement. Devotees become, when you become a full-fledged devotee, when you become more and more dedicated to Krishna's service, you end up becoming more active, not less. But you give up the old activities and replace them with better ones. You don't work for money anymore, you just work for Krishna's pleasure, and Krishna takes care of you. That's the higher renunciation. No, not even thought of making money. But Krishna provides. Prabhupada said that the attitude of devotees living in the temple should be the management of the temples. Just preach. And Lakshmi will fly in the window. You know? The money will come. You just preach. So a devotee who can have that mature attitude, he actually doesn't have to think about money. He doesn't have to work for money. Although nowadays, in the modern world, that's all people do. You read Dharma Shastras, how it used to be in ancient times in India, that a Brahmin should work for 2 or 3 hours a day. Maybe from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock in the afternoon, he works. The rest of the day, he's just studying Shastra, doing puja, meditating, and he gets away with it. Yeah. Who nowadays can maintain his family at working only 2 hours a day? But back then, they could do it. And it can be done. You can live without working for money if you're fully dedicated to Krishna's mission. And nobody will call you a parasite. Anything else?
Yes. You talked about Uddhav Purnam.
I didn't get the point.
That is not the real Uddhav Purnam, but you said
the real Uddhava Baitak, the place where he's actually staying, is in between the Parakam path, in the inside where the bushes are. Tangle of bushes behind or on the side of Kusuma Sarovara.
So, but you said that was made by some Punjabi person, and that is not.
It's close. It's not. It's only about 50 yards off, but it's not exactly the right spot.
It's not the right spot.
Yeah. There's a small ashram or a little temple back there. We have. When you're coming back from Radhakunda on the other side, you pass Kusuma Sarovara. Next to Kusuma Sarovara is a small Banavihari temple where Ariskav devotees are staying. Behind that, a little bit past that, is a small ashram that you don't see from the Karakam Mark. Behind, that is the actual spot. That little temple is where Uddhava is sitting. Or behind that, in the bushes.
When are we leaving?
Tomorrow morning?
Like 7 o'clock?
I'm going on the Taj Express. Yeah.
How many hours drive?
It's a little under 2 hours, the fastest way to go.
And now I have a question for you.
It arrives in Mathura at 9:50.
I have a question for you now.
Yeah.
Please describe how you met and where you met Srila Prabhupada.
I didn't meet Prabhupada directly in the beginning. I only had, even after that, only about 10 minutes of personal face-to-face association with Prabhupada at all.
How long ago was that?
I met the devotees. I first saw the devotees on television in 1966, when I was still a student in high school. But I met the devotees when I was going to the university in New York City. And I joined the New York Temple in 1973. Okay, Prabhupada did come there 2 weeks after I moved into the temple. But I didn't get to sit in the same room with him, except for in the temple room during Bhagavatam class. Only a year, two years later, did I even meet Prabhupada for a few minutes. ISKCON was already a big society when I joined it. And someone like me, a newcomer, was not allowed to just walk in and talk to Prabhupada.
And then how did you get inspired, and how was that you...
Prabhupada books?
And how were you able to...
Prabhupada books and samosas.
And so forth. And so perfect memories are 11th February, onward. You're also associated with that.
I helped a few other devotees working on that. Yes,
the Pedalam question.
Yes.
We heard that you have helped in translations of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th, 11th canto with Hridayam.
Yes, yeah. I was helping.
In California or where?
In California, then later in Florida. We moved from there. Then I moved to North Carolina, in various places, three different places in the United States.
I would like to mention one last thing. Srila Prabhupada exempted one devotee who used to cook six times bhogas.
Yes.
Krishna, and Srila Prabhupada exempted him. He said, as long as you are doing your service and chanting with your mind, etc.
Exempted him from chanting 16 rounds, you mean?
Physical chanting.
Yes.
Allowed him mental chanting.
Yes. Well, that's not, well, Prabhupada can do that. He has the authority.
Right.
You know. But he did warn his disciples that I am establishing a standard that 16 rounds must be chanted by initiated devotees. And originally Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he demanded that everyone chants one lakhadai. Mahaprabhu would not eat in the house of anyone who is not a lakhpati, who didn't chant 64 rounds a day. He didn't consider him a real follower. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wanted his disciples to chant 64 rounds, except the preachers were excused. They could chant only 16. Those who were doing very active service in the temple could do only 16 rounds a day. Prabhupada basically wanted that standard, that we all chant minimum 16 rounds a day. And he said that in the future, although I have decreased the number of rounds to 16, in the future no one has the right to increase that any further to less than 16. If Prabhupada wanted to make an exception for one devotee or two devotees because they were very busily doing some service, and maybe in their individual cases they wouldn't chant their rounds anyway, so Prabhupada said, okay, I give you my blessings, do what you're doing. Yeah. Because they may have been devotees who, you know, if we told them to chant, they wouldn't chant. Yeah.
Authority.
But Prabhupada didn't allow us to imitate that. Now, otherwise, you know, next generation will go down to 8 rounds, and after that, the next generation 4. Prabhupada didn't want to see that happen. Now, 16 is the minimum. If someone cannot chant 16 rounds, they should be encouraged, and they should be encouraged to do some service. But they shouldn't be given initiation unless they can take the vow to chant 16 rounds and follow 4 regular principles. Without that, diksha should not be given.
You mentioned that the higher rasas are based on or developed from the last
year. Yeah, like built on top of it, yes.
So this is higher in what sense? Because materially conditioned, we can't understand the difference of the rasas, and how to accept and how to understand that it's a higher rasa.
More intimate. More surrendered, more selfless. It takes more devotion to be a friend of Krishna than to be his servant. It takes even more to be his parent. And it takes the most to be his lover. It takes the most selflessness and complete dedication. If we don't understand that, we should study and try to learn it, to understand it. That's explained in the Bhagavatam. We study the Bhagavatam, we'll get some training in those ideas. We can read the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which explains this, the differences among these different rasas and how one is better than the other. We can read Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's very vivid, simple explanation of these things there. That's our Krishna conscious education, to understand this science of rasa. And the original teacher is Rupa Goswami. It's a great science. It's a secret science. Other sampradayas don't have any idea about it. You know, they don't have any idea how one rasa is better than another. Or even that the rasas are there sometimes. Some Vaishnavas have no idea of rasa. And what speak of the gradations of rasas? That's only understood in the line of Rupa Goswami.
So we may not, as beginners, we may not understand all these things. But like we're in the pre-med course, we'll learn how to perform brain surgery. You know, 10 years later. Right now we're in the pre-med course, so we'll learn these things later on. Right now we're in the preliminary course.
Are these traditions conceivable by the material mind?
No, you have to spiritualize your mind to understand these things. When you redirect your senses and your mind toward the service of Krishna, they become spiritualized. And your brain becomes spiritualized, and then you can understand these esoteric, transcendental understandings. Otherwise, you can't. If you're in Maya, you can't understand these things. You can't understand the taste of Krishna consciousness. What to speak of the varieties of taste. You can't understand why being Krishna's servant is better than being in Maya. And you decide, oh, let me just be in Maya. Because you lose the taste. You lose your intelligence if you're not following the practice and give up on it. Don't chant your rounds for 2 days and you'll experience it.
Don't advise that.
Okay.
That's like society.
Sorry, I didn't mean that as a duly experiment.
For us to train ourselves from chanting is like design.
Yeah, it's like the chemist, you know, you want to identify chemicals by their taste. But I don't know if in the books they have indicated what's the taste of cyanide. No, because nobody wants to try to taste it.
Some people
you won't be there to
say right.
Some people have tried to taste cyanide. Yeah. But they spend in everything, you know.
Yeah?
Oh. They couldn't move any further.
Oh. I mean, they got scared.
No.
They I
mean, they had no energy to write, you know. If cyanide acts so fast.
They died.
But some people try, intensely try.
Hare Krishna. Sorry. Unfortunately, some devotees have also tried the experiment of stopping their rounds. And they've seen what happens. It's happened.
Okay.
You know, why do I have to bother with this? Let me just forget it. You know, you lose your enthusiasm, and then you can't understand why this rasa is better than the rasa of eating stools.
I can mention one example.
Yes.
When Pujari, he was a Pujari in the Kala Chandi in Dallas, Texas.
Yes.
For 8 years.
Yes.
Every day he's doing arti and all. Everything, full time devotee in temples. And then for some reason he quit his rounds, you know, for some reason. Mm-hmm. And then he was thrown away from the temple. He was living 15 miles away. He still used to visit.
Yes.
So one day he said his story. He said he doesn't have enthusiasm anymore now in chanting.
Yes.
He said it's sad.
Maya is very heavy in Texas and other places like that.
But he said he is still vegetarian, he still follows all four rules, but has no enthusiasm for chanting.
But what enthusiasm does he have for material life? Probably not much of that either.
But he's in Maya now.
Yeah. but the devotee, once you've tasted Krishna consciousness and you've gotten a big good taste, you can't be satisfied with material life anymore either. Yeah.
Well, it shows.
Like the example of Yamunacharya, where he literally spits at the thought of the material life because he's tasted the Krishna consciousness.
Yes. Well, he didn't fall into Maya, but a devotee who does can make a good attempt to enjoy again, but he can't really get into it. He can't really enjoy it anymore. Eventually, he's going to have to come back to Krishna because he won't get satisfaction out of material life. Yes.
You said when we are offering dandavats, we are offering ourselves as a servant to the Lord. But since we don't have the feelings, so to have the feeling, do we need to have the knowledge? Just like you just told us that.
Well, you can get knowledge theoretically from books, and you can get knowledge from experience. Like, here, take this bag of books, go out there, you know, commonplace, and stop people in the street, try to sell those books. And people are going to refuse you, they're going to treat you unkindly, and you're going to be frustrated. And you'll learn humility. Not theoretically, but practically. So that, you know, sometimes that's a better way than just out of books. You should do both. You should read the books,
But then we should go out, you know, in the workshop and get some practical experience of what these things mean.
That's a workshop.
Or any service, any attempt to do service in this modern world.
Yeah.
Even sweep the floor in the temple. Yeah. Do anything. Pick up our beads and chant a few rounds. It's everything to struggle against the influence of mind. Then you learn by trying to actually serve Krishna, do some practical service, then you get practical education.
And
that's knowledge.
Like how to get the feelings, you know, like when we are offering bandwas, like when we are taking arti, we do it very mechanically, just take it and just do it. How to develop the feelings?
Like we should develop love for Krishna. To get love for Krishna, we should learn to appreciate him. We should understand how wonderful he is. Yeah, that's also we shouldn't just understand vicariously reading stories about Krishna. We should develop our own relationship with Krishna.
Yeah.
You know, through our spiritual master, through the service that we're given, by practicing that service and by developing our relationship with our guru and godbrothers, we learn, you know, what it's like to be Krishna's servant and what a wonderful master Krishna is. Then we become appreciative of him and we develop love. Then the feelings come. But again, it's from practice, it's from actual application, not just theory. Doing service, to realize any real attraction to Krishna, we have to practice serving him. We have to accept some responsibility in Krishna's service. Yeah?
Guru, you have come and decided to stay in India, and there are many like me staying in America. Now, there are many Indians here who are behaving like Americans, you can say, dress-wise, mentality-wise, and all that. And likewise, in America, there are many who would like to become a devotee. So where do you see the world going? Many people adopting Krishna consciousness in Western countries, Russia, and in India, many people leaving Krishna consciousness, you can say, and adopting Western ways, drinking Coca-Cola and things like that. To McDonald's and all the influence of Maya. So where do you see personally, where are we going?
I'm not Nostradamus, I don't know. We're in crucial turning point, you know, it's a volatile time in history. Things are changing, the world is changing, the opulence and comfort of the West may not be there, you know, a few years from now, things are going to change. But I unfortunately, you know, what I've seen, the changes in India over the last 30 years is becoming much more materialistic,
right,
especially in the big cities and among the young people. It looks pretty, dismal, the prospect. We should have taken more advantage when ISKCON first established itself in India. It should have really pushed to make a lot of preaching propaganda and spread Krishna consciousness. Now it's going to be harder. You know, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is all merciful and all powerful. I don't see how we're going to do it, but you know, by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, we can still save India, I guess.
You see, whenever I ask this question to myself or to others,
yes,
the answer I get is that no matter what,
yes,
it is the influence of Kali Yuga, no matter what. It's the influence of Kali Yuga.
Yeah, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is stronger than Kali.
Okay.
Kali is terrified of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and
his
devotees.
That's what I'm expecting.
But we have to be Lord Chaitanya's representatives. Preach his message. Then Kali will just, you know, go find someplace else. You know, go to Afghanistan or someplace. India can be cleaned up, but the devotees, the ones who know the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they have to preach it. They have to live it and preach it. Then that will change India. Or any country. But why not India?
Bharati Bhumati Hoilam Manusha Jama. Those, first of all, those who were born in India have the responsibility given them by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to take up this mission. Take it up heart and soul and change the course of this, you know, corrupt civilization. We should to make a radical commitment and not be participants in this materialistic civilization.
You just explain again, you said you, one must develop a relationship with Krishna while we are offering gunbots or what, when we are having moved in front of the deities and the,
well, those are external things. The real thing is to develop a service relationship.
A service relationship?
Yeah. Actually accept responsibility in Krishna's service. The bowing down, ringing bells and waving incense, that's for neophytes. Prabhupada's Vaisheshtastakam was offering the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in 1956, whatever year. He said, let the neophytes in the temples ring the bells. But the business of the mature devotees is to go out and preach.
Likewise, once Bhakti Charu Maharaj was giving a lecture, rather a seminar, you know, for an entire day.
Yes.
And during noon time, you know, it was arti time, and
yes,
some devotees, including me, wanted to go to the temple and see the arti ceremony and all.
Uh-huh.
And the temple president and Bhakti Charu Maharaj stopped. He said, that will bring disruption in the class.
Yes.
Class is more essential than worship in temple.
Yes.
At the time of the year, in the time of the year.
Yes. That was what I thought of, didn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, here we should stop now. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.